Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Well, I'm delighted this morning to have one of my friends and respected colleagues, Michael Dowling, Parkite leader, awesome guy here in the studio. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Mary Beth. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we're here excited to talk about your brand new book, The Unlikely Leader, Breaking the Bias That Keeps Great Leaders Invisible. Well, I know about this book because I have enjoyed being a teeny part of its process, but maybe share with our listeners a little bit about what brought you to the idea of wanting to write a book at all.
Well, I've been in business. I've been a leader for many, many years, and all through different types of businesses, big businesses and startups. And I thought I might have something to say, like a lot of people. And so I started writing something probably 6 or 7 years ago, and I looked at it and thought, this is just bad. It's just, it's derivative, it's drivel. And that sort of set me on a path to say, well, why am I really writing this book? And what really it came down to was just trying to understand my own journey as a leader and the things that I found myself struggling with as a leader. And, you know, what I came to realize was that there's this bias that exists out there that really influences how we look at leaders. And, you know, the idea is that for generations, we have this image of what a leader looks like. Someone is confident, charismatic, unflappable, right? Authoritarian. And the problem with that is that it really influences who gets to lead, not only at an organizational level, because they're looking for those signals. Those are signals that are really, you know, representative in their minds of what leadership looks like. But worse, it gets internalized. And that was the story I was trying to understand in my path. You know, I was, you know, from an early age, I was in rooms where leadership was and looked like a certain character or personality trait, if you will. I grew up in a town where it was filled with finance people and CEOs. I was a young talent agent in Hollywood where image is everything.
Big personalities.
And you know, I was in these rooms with these people, and I may have looked like I belonged from the outside, but internally, I was struggling. I was trying to perform a role of leadership that I thought I needed to be. You know, that kind of model that I was seeing in front of me. And, you know, eventually it sort of eroded my sense of joy. And as I studied this more, I realized that it was systemic. There's a reason why we have this stereotype, why we believe it. So the book was really to explore that, understand what I could do to bring greater awareness to this idea of how this stereotype is impacting my kids, right? How they're viewing leadership. Some of the lessons I learned along the way, I'd love to impart to them so that they don't find themselves falling into these traps. And because it's so image oriented, there's the way the world works right now with social media and other things that are constantly bombarding us. Even the way, you know, we see our government leaders as standing up there on these stages and, you know, leading from this position of authority and strength. That's not the only style of leadership. And so I was really just trying to understand how this stereotype came to be, why we continue to fall into this trap, and how I can help people understand that internal dialogue that might be holding themselves back, because there are great leaders out there that are getting completely overlooked in organizations. And not that I was necessarily overlooked, but I was trying to be someone that I wasn't. And so I think, you know, that's the reaction that a lot of people have when they look at whether they think they could be a leader or not. They're looking at those familiar signals and saying, well, if that's how I have to be a leader, I'm not sure I'm comfortable doing that. So either they withdraw or they try to be someone that they're not.
Yeah, so there's some self-selecting choices that go on when someone doesn't see themselves fitting into that cookie cutter of what a leader, quote unquote, is supposed to look like. What are some of the traits of someone who might be a terrific leader, but not this kind of big showy you know, high charisma, high noise kind of leader. What other kind of traits might emerge from someone who's an unlikely leader?
Yeah, so, I mean, first maybe identifying what are some of the traps that companies fall into when they're thinking about identifying potential. One is confidence. They look at confidence as competence, right? They look at visibility as value. They look at familiarity as fitness to lead. So these are some of the familiar signals that companies are using. And I think companies need to reassess those, because confidence can be faked. And there are some people who are really good at demonstrating confidence, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have the skills to do it. And so what I want to encourage companies to do is to look at other signals. What we need in leaders today are people who can build trust. We need people who, when you look around the room, who is heightening the conversation in the room based on the questions that they're asking? Who's coming to the table with humility and willing to take feedback and grow from that? Who are the people who are just naturally empathic and listen well and aren't always trying to hold space for themselves, but are holding space for others? These are some of the characteristics that we need in leaders now more than ever. The world is changing so rapidly, and with AI really being an engine of that, we need people who can be discerning, make really informed business and thoughtful decisions, and that requires people to sort of think about things and not just act with speed. You know, one of the things I talk about in my book is that people who make fast decisions are immediately thought of as intelligent.
Hmm.
And that's, you know, that is certainly the case at times, but there's a lot of people who are absorbing information, listening to it, processing it, and they come back with some amazing things. And if they're not given the space within those meetings or those environments where they can make those thoughts known, we're missing out on a ton of innovation. So I think part of it is recognizing what are some of those, what do we need in leaders today, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we need humility. I think we need discernment. I think we need people who can coach and build trust and all those things. But that's going to differ based on companies. So I think companies really need to redefine what it means to be a leader in today's environment. And and those familiar signals are things that, you know, again, can I don't want to say faked. I mean, there's some, what I don't want to say is that that style of leadership is wrong. It's just limiting, right?
It just shouldn't be the only one.
It shouldn't be the only one, and we need to make space for others.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Michael Dowling, whose new book, Unlikely Leader, Breaking the Bias That Keeps Great Leaders Invisible, is kind of breaking down some of these assumptions that a lot of folks have about what a leader is supposed to look like or what type of person you need to be in order to lead. I think that there's a lot of trickle-down culture that happens in companies. How can people it's natural if you're emerging, you're a young person in the workforce, you're seeing, I think kids today, and I say kids meaning people in their 20s, but young people today in the workforce, they're redefining a lot of things. They're shaking it up, and that's their job, and that's fantastic. But say somebody who was raised on a certain kind of diet of what a leader's supposed to look like, how can they, if you're at the higher end of a company, what are some of the strategies that you encourage the people in current leadership to adopt in order to recognize these people who might be flying under the radar?
Yeah, great question. So I think it's redefine what leadership is, right? Is leadership volume and visibility? And it's certainly those things, but what are some of those other traits that we're looking for? So that's the first step. Then companies need to audit what signals are getting noticed or rewarded, right? So are rewarding people who are showing up visibly. It's really easy to just, you know, there's always the person that has a great ability to be political and you know, curry favor with the CEO. And there's nothing wrong with that. We need people who can network well and who can build relationships. But we need to audit what are the signals that we're rewarding. The other thing we need to do is we need to create more pathways for leaders to be seen in the organization. And one of the most important things is we need to train our managers, the people who are the closest to the next level of leaders coming up, we needed to train them to see some of those other signals.
Right, right.
Because when the CEO or a VP says to the managers, hey, we need to find high potentials. That's how it's defined. Mm. The way that they assess that is through what we call performance and potential matrix, right? And there's a 9-box matrix that they look at. And they base it on, the potential and performance. And how are you determining potential, right? Mm-hmm. Potential is often about visibility and presence and some of those characteristics. Well, how do we redefine potential by saying, there are people in the room who are raising that conversation. There are people who are managing across differences. Those people are managing ambiguity. Those people also have incredible emotional regulation or the ability to be, emotionally regulating. And then there's the performance trap. Oftentimes people who perform get raised in the organization. And that sometimes does a disservice to the company and to them, because just because you performed in your job doesn't mean you're necessarily a leader. Mm. And so I'm trying to kind of change the methodology. Right now we sort of hire for or train and build based on performance and potential, which is fine, right? And I want to kind of change that by saying let's notice these other signals and give space for people, and then also create sponsorship so that the CEO or the others are not just pushing this down into the organization, but they're saying we need to recognize those people. We actually need to give them sponsorship within the organization, and that will give them a level up. And that's what I call kind of the ceiling, right? It's those societal norms, and then the floor is really those internal models that we tend to absorb over time and believe over repetition. And so part of my book is really helping people to see those mindsets that hold you back. And and part of it were the mindsets that held me back that I needed to think about. And I really believe that your mindset influences your behavior, right? Oh, 100%. How are you showing up? And then that determines your outcomes. And so the outcomes a lot of times for unlikely leaders is holding back, not stepping into the leadership roles that they're already doing. A lot of these people are already inherently leading, right? And so leadership for me is not a personality trait. It's not something you inherit. There's certainly natural born leaders, but that's not the only model. And I want to help those leaders step in to leadership, right? Based on who they are most authentically. And I've seen this in organizations. I've been a leader, and I've oversaw leaders. Those are some of the people that get the greatest results, right? And we're missing them. And what I say is that leadership is actually a practice. So those people who come with those natural skills and attributes and traits of listening and empathy and all that, they can be trained to be leaders, right? We can help them to build that practice versus having to go in and help leaders who are already in position to learn empathy, to learn listening, to learn those skills.
And isn't it something like 1 out of 5 CEOs could be on the DSM as a psychopath? So teaching the people at the very highest echelon to, be guiding with compassion and empathy, sometimes it's just the way people are built. Everyone's
That's
built
right.
differently, right? Well, I love the story in your book about PJ, your son, when his art teacher flagged him from working too slowly. You and your wife came to see that same trait as a strength rather than a delay. So how did watching your own child kind of get judged or misjudged change the way you think about leaders who get overlooked in adulthood?
Yeah, this was one of the most, I think incredible leadership lessons I learned through my 5-year-old. And when we went in to talk to the teacher, we were thinking, does he have some sort of delay,
sure.
right? Is there something going on here? And it was an art class. And we asked her what was going on. And, this is our first child. We're very, concerned about his development. And she said, when we put a figure, like a bird in the middle of the table, we asked them to sketch it and draw it. And all the other kids start drawing right away. PJ looks at the bird from one angle, and then he goes 45 degrees around the table, looks at it from that angle. He does this until he's all the way done to 360 degree circle. And he doesn't start drawing. So by the time he starts drawing, all the other kids' drawings have been, completed.
And they're in the cubby.
Right. They're in the cubby, right. They're looking for their snack, right? And PJ's still, just starting. And she thought that was, because he was kind of getting behind in his drawings or whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It was crazy. And my wife and I, kind of went into the car after that, and we were like, is this a delay? I mean, we said we would look
and
just monitor him. Is this a delay or is this something else? And we were like, no, this kid is really trying to understand all the angles. He's seeing things that maybe other people aren't seeing. And it was a great metaphor for how we need to make space for that with leaders in our organizations, because their empathy, their emotions, some of these skills that we have or traits that we have that people perceive potentially as weaknesses are incredible superpowers.
Yes.
And so I was really excited to just say, my wife and I were like, no, we're going to let him be that kid, right? He needs that space. And we're going to help him to find, so it comes back to decision making. There are some decisions you need to make quickly. But not every decision needs to be made quickly, especially if it's a larger one. And so what we did is we said, look, we're going to help him understand what are the decisions you need to make faster, right? And what are those decisions that you can sort of slow down and look at? And so it's really understanding mm-hmm. how to do that. And that's a leadership skill that we train.
Yeah. And that, Thinking Fast and Slow, that book that came out a little while ago, there are things in life that, yes, you can overthink to death, and you don't need to spend a ton of time. But then there are things that we shouldn't be knee-jerking when we're making decisions in government, making decisions about who we're going to marry, making decisions
right.
about where if we're going to relocate. Yes, we need a lot of time to work through and untangle those. Unlikely Leader argues that the qualities like just charisma and confidence, I like to think of those as almost like presentation traits. Mm-hmm. Some people are fantastic presenters. Let them present. That's fantastic. It doesn't necessarily mean they also need to run the company.
Right.
But that they get mistaken for leadership ability. Who is someone in your life who maybe didn't have those kind of traits on the surface, but who turned out to be one of the strongest leaders you know?
Oh, by far it was my father. He's the first unlikely leader I ever knew. And, the reason he's an unlikely leader is he was given up for adoption at inception. The woman, she was a younger woman who did not want to have a baby, but was in a very religious family. And so she sort of went away for a while and had the baby and gave him up immediately. And he had that sense of abandonment his whole life. And I remember one time I came home, I was a young talent agent. At this point I was a talent agent. And there was some just crazy things happening at work that just created a lot of emotion in me. And I came home and I was really down on myself. I was like, emotions are making me weak. And he stopped and he said, you know what? Your awareness, your ability to see those things and have that emotion is your superpower. And I was like, what? No, it's a weakness. He said, no, let me tell you a story. He was in and out of foster homes and, he was a foundling. So he was in and out of different homes and things. I'm forgetting the name of it right now. But he said that because he wanted to stay with the family that he was, in the foster home, he was afraid because he kept on getting sent back, right, to the orphanage. And thought it was him. He thought it was his, it was all about him. So he decided he was going to shrink himself. Mm-hmm. And when he would go into a foster home, he would just be quiet, hide, figuratively and literally.
Not make any waves.
Not make any waves. And he said from that vantage point, he learned to read the room. And he said that was sort of that emotional awareness of what was going on around the room helped him to figure out back then. It was more about how do I stay here? But then he used that to bring into leadership to say, I can see things that maybe other people can't see. I can see different angles. I can see people for who they are. And if I can bring the best out in those people and the way that this their authentic self, I'm going to get the best impact out of them. And he was an amazing businessman. He came into a publication that was losing over $2 million a year. And within 5 years, he had it generating $17 million in
wow.
free cash flow. And he did this through this style of leadership that wasn't, you know, leading from the stage. And he was very good. He could stand up in front of people, but it was that authenticity coming through loud and clear. And people crave that. People crave that authenticity.
Oh, they do.
And I think this younger generation that's coming into the workforce now even more so craves that authenticity.
Yeah. Well, you open the book and refer to times, several times, to your early years in LA, working in the mailroom of a talent agency, which maybe is the most like stratified, like, I don't know, I don't want to surface oriented, like how you look, how you act, how much riz you got, like those are really apparent in a talent agency and in LA in general. I feel like
for sure.
Every time I go there, I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to get better clothes or something, because I feel like I look like a country bumpkin. But here in Park City, I'm happy, perfectly happy, you know.
Right.
So if a younger version of yourself, the one grinding through the mailroom, still convinced that he needed to become someone else in order to be taken seriously, could hear this book read aloud, what's one thing you'd want that younger version of yourself to take from it?
By far, it's your authentic self is the best form of leadership that you can give. And it's actually a form of leadership that is more desired today than a more performative type of leadership. And, you know, I'm trying to tackle this from two angles. I'm trying to tackle it from the organizational level to say, hey, let's recognize these people. But then I'm also I want to help the people who are rising up, who may not see themselves reflected in the image of leadership that we put out there, to say, here are the skills that I have that are transferable into leadership. And here are the mindsets that I need to be mindful of, right? Mm. Because they are influencing my outcomes. And why might I be shying away? Or why might I be performing a style of leadership? Like in Hollywood, when I got there, there's the notion of, in order to be treated like a king, you gotta act like a king, right?
Fake it till you make it. It should be like underneath the Hollywood population sign.
It is. And what I realized was, as a young talent agent, I was trying to be someone that I wasn't. I was trying to portray this view of what I thought a leader looked like. And the minute I started to recognize, like, my emotions didn't make me weak, that, you know, the way I show up in terms of making decisions, the way I show up in terms of, you know, recognizing other people, and those are the things that help me to connect with my clients better and connect with people. And that was my style of leadership. And so I didn't need to be someone else in order to do that. I just needed to lean more into who I was and understand that what I was perceiving to be weaknesses are great strengths. And I think with social media now, we're bombarded with images, curated images. And so I think it's really important for people to recognize, hey, maybe there's something reflected in that that I can take away with. There's nothing wrong with being inspired by others and, you know, maybe forming an idea of how you might lead differently, but emulating them or trying to be someone that you're not is ultimately, it's gonna, you'll see through it, right? They want that authenticity.
Yeah, you're not gonna fool them.
And you can maybe get away with it a while. There's a lot of people who can perform it. But what I found was it was eroding my sense of self-joy and it was exhausting.
It is. Well, this has gone entirely too fast. We've been speaking with Michael Dowling, author of a new book, The Unlikely Leader, Breaking the Bias That Keeps Great Leaders Invisible. And this is a book that is relevant whether you run a company, whether you're working in a company, whether you are part of an organization or school or team, or if you're a parent and you're just looking at your kids and you're thinking, gosh, they have such different traits and I want to make sure to support each of them in the way that helps them the most. There's a lot in here for wherever you might be in your life. And where can people pre-order the book? It comes out in a few days.
Yes, it's on Amazon now.
Great.
Under The Unlikely Leader, Michael Dowling.
Dowling, yes.
And it will be delivered to you next week. And then also we're going to try to get some copies at Dolly's.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Michael Dowling, thank you so much for being on The Mountain Life.